Chapter 2. Opposites Attract. When Melania and I were first becoming friends, I thought we complemented each other, like Lucy and Ethel or Snooki and JWoww. Essentially, our differences attracted us to each other and were the reason we became so close, and our interactions seemed effortless. Our different values, backgrounds, outlooks, and philosophies kept us enthralled. It was a friendship of endless discovery, especially since she kept so much of herself private. The first difference I noticed between us was that Melania carried herself with real confidence from the inside out, while my confidence was sporadic, frequently outweighed by insecurity. As soon as she stepped into the Vogue offices, it was as if she was in the movie Aladdin, and her genie was taking his bride on a magic carpet ride. Her relationship with Donald was life-altering for her. It catapulted her from model to model. Thanks to him, she actually had the magazine covers and photo shoots she would claim that she'd always had on her efforts alone. Exuding confidence was paramount. She wanted to appear assured, mysterious, and strong to the outside world, and she did. I saw those qualities in her and was hooked. When she looked in the mirror, she probably saw what everyone else did. Her confident Melania self-image and her true self, I believe, are one and the same. The true self in my mirror, the one precious few really know, isn't nearly as confident and strong as I might appear to be. I have doubts, insecurities, self-esteem issues I can't hide from. My friends know when I'm not feeling my best. Melania would never let anyone see her vulnerable. From that first day, I envied Melania's confidence and her ability to put herself first. For a people pleaser like me, I was fascinated. I always got sucked into other people's needs and wants. She never apologized for putting her needs first. Over the years to come, I'd hear her say, "Pleasing anyone else is not my priority." Life philosophies. Philosophically speaking, Melania seemed to follow Plato, the Greek philosopher, who believed in the control and mastery of emotion. He described emotion and reason as two horses pulling us in opposite directions. Not saying Melania is always reasonable, but her first instinct is to suppress emotion. My first instinct is to wallow and or bask in my feelings and to express them. If I tried to suppress my emotions, I might explode. I prefer the philosophy of Plato's best student, Aristotle, who believed that it is essential for a good life to learn to experience a full range of emotion, which I would, and Melania could work her magic to calm me down with a look or a comment. I felt like I needed her, and I was only too happy to help her when she needed me. My glass half-empty pessimism would get the best of me, and her cup runneth over optimism would be there to pick me up. I admired how she always stayed level-headed and in control. Her even keel brought the best out in me. Self-care. I have a tendency to put things off, not work or family stuff, but what I need to do for my own health and wellness. For example, making and keeping doctor and dentist appointments. My nails, bitten to the quick. Hair, I go for months without a cut. I end up hiding my roots with top secret hair fibers. Melania takes extremely good care of herself, inside and out, especially out. She rarely left her Trump Tower penthouse without an immaculate outfit. She has a glam squad at her beck and call, although she does just fine without them. She mastered the art of Melania, always seeming perfect, model-like. She would rarely let someone see her without a full face of makeup and a perfect do. Don't bother asking her for tips, though. She won't share which cosmetics brands she uses. I remember one lunch at our favorite restaurant, Harry Cipriani, located near Central Park, off the lobby of the Sherry Netherland Hotel in New York City. I ran in late, as usual, lugging my purse with me. I might as well have been carrying around my kitchen sink. It was such a mess. I saw her through the glass door. She was already seated at our table, front and center, cool as a cucumber. Melania and I did our usual round of sweeties, kisses, and hugs. Then I dropped my bag on the floor. Her eyes widened and threatened to pop out. "Don't put your bag on the floor. Put it on the chair." "What's in there?" Post-it notes with scribbles I couldn't read, old insurance claim forms I needed to mail in, receipts, tickets, candy wrappers, makeup I never wore, a hairbrush I never used, a few hair scrunchies, a dozen pens and Sharpies, my agenda, notepads, a can of Coke Zero, and a bag of dried mangoes. Your basic mess. Melania's purse was always pristine, and she treated it with gentle care. At times, she only had her green American Express on her, sans purse. My bags got a daily beating and showed it. She understood that I carried my life in my bags, but she wrinkled her nose at how disorganized they were. How do you find anything? Well, I use my hand like a claw, see, and just grab what I can and see what comes up. I demonstrated and came up with a handful of already chewed hard gum nuggets wrapped in scraps of paper. It can get kind of sticky, though. She looked at me with great bemusement. Careers. Melania's career is to support her husband. I have worked since I got out of college. The milestones have been my job at Vogue and being the founding fashion director at Lincoln Center, where I produced Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week with IMG Fashion, a job I accepted at Anna's suggestion and that I dutifully held for several years. When I got caught up in the politics between IMG Fashion and all the various constituents at Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts, I felt like my hands were tied. Anna gave me the best advice. Leave, she said, and I did. I created my own consulting company, SWW Creative, where I worked with clients and companies including Hermes, American Express, CAA, Mattel, and the New York Knicks, to name a few. I was removed from the headaches of working for a large corporation and gained freedom that allowed me to produce and work on several TV and film projects, including the Style Awards with Penske Media Corporation and the feature films 37, A Final Promise, and Inside Game, something I'd always been interested in pursuing. Melania's career had been patchy. She modeled, as we have all been told ad nauseum, in her late teens and early 20s. To me, she sometimes referenced her background in design, but fleetingly. She studied architecture at the University of Ljubljana, but dropped out after her freshman year to sign up with an Italian modeling agency. Her career as a model officially began in 1992 when she won second place in the Face of the Year contest, according to an article by Gerardo Reyes for Univision News. Melania rarely spoke to me about her modeling career in Paris and Milan from 1992 to 1996, after which she moved to New York. Reputable modeling jobs were set up for her after Donald came into her life in 1998. She stopped working entirely when Baron was born in 2006. 4 years later, in 2010, she sold the Melania Timepieces and Jewelry line on QVC. At the time, she told me excitedly that she had meetings, so many meetings, about this and that, and that she had drawn some sketches for the line. Although QVC sales were brisk, that venture ended after one season. A couple of years later, she developed a skincare line and heavily promoted Melania Beauty Caviar Complex C6 in 2013 on The Celebrity Apprentice and Good Morning America. But due to a series of lawsuits between the owners of the company she was working with, the line wasn't made readily available in stores. In all fairness, Melania was only 28 when she met Donald, and she was very well aware of what he wanted and didn't want in his third wife. He wasn't the kind of husband who cheered on his wife's career. Melania told me the secret of her long marriage to him is that she is completely different from his other wives. Unlike Marla Maples, Melania didn't pressure him emotionally. Unlike Ivana, Donald's first wife, who ran one of his Atlantic City casinos and sold jewelry and clothes on QVC for a decade, Melania didn't pressure Donald for things to do. As a publicity and marketing expert, I was confused about why Melania didn't use the name Trump to sell her products. She said, "I want it to be mine." She'd spent a decade on Donald's arm by the time she launched her brand. Perhaps she was ready to stand on her own? Did she believe her own hype, that her celebrity would be enough to move product? She insists that she was always a top model, even before she met Donald, and was a one-name icon like Cher or Beyoncé. All she thought she needed to do was slap a big letter M on a pump bottle and it would fly off the shelves. But still, why not use the Trump brand for that extra nudge? Perhaps she wasn't telling me the whole truth. It was entirely possible that Donald didn't allow her to use his name. After all, another female family member had a lock on Trump-branded women's products. Ivanka had sat next to Donald in the boardroom on The Apprentice and The Celebrity Apprentice, and brand integrations were a hallmark of the show. Ivanka had launched Ivanka Trump Fine Jewelry in 2007 and became the name and face of the Spa by Ivanka Trump in Trump Hotels in 2009, and she would launch her apparel and accessories brands in 2011. In a battle of the brands between Melania and Ivanka, with Donald slash Daddy keeping an eye on the bottom line, it's obvious who wins. Relationships. I had the same boyfriend from my junior year in high school through my years in college at Fordham and Loyola Universities. In my early 20s, I decided to expand my horizons. My husband, David, likes to tease me and say, she dated an Alex from every country, who spoke every language, and who came in every size, mainly short. In reality, it was only two guys named Alex. The story of how David and I met is pretty cute, if I do say so myself. Unbeknownst to us, we had three mutual friends, Andrea, Mitch, and Jeff, who didn't know each other. One afternoon, Mitch called David at the office and said, hey, check out my girlfriend in Time magazine. It was a close-up of Mitch's girlfriend and me. The two of us were bidding for clients during the Jackie O auction. That's great, David said. Who's the good-looking broad next to her? We played the telephone game for 6 months. After having dinner with Andrea, I realized the David she'd been trying to fix me up with was also Jeff and Mitch's David, who'd left ignored messages on my answering machine. I ran home and called him back. It all felt serendipitous and predestined. We got married 4 years later, March 18, 2000, at the Pierre Hotel with 300 of our family and friends, including Anna and Andre, in attendance. I've had to attend a lot of gatherings and events throughout my career, but given the choice, I would have gladly stayed home and cuddled on the couch in our apartment with my hubby and our children. Melania has never been much of a party girl either. Her former manager, Paolo Zampoli, once told the New York Post, she only went to movies by herself and to the gym. This is a woman who modeled for Camel cigarettes on a huge billboard, but stayed home all the time. I believe it. The Melania I know preferred to sit around the penthouse in her Trump bathrobe or to march around with weights on her ankles, pumping her pink dumbbells. I visited her at Trump Tower more times than I can count. I've lived in my current apartment, 5 blocks from her, for 6 years, and Melania has never stepped foot inside it. One evening, we were texting and I wrote, why don't you just come over? Like you'd say to any close friend. She laughed at the insanity of that idea, as in, yeah, like that's going to happen, and demurred. She is a come-to-me person. It's been reported that Melania had dated a Slovenian while in college. I'm only aware of a previous boyfriend in Paris or Milan. She dated before Donald, of course. Her former roommate, photographer Matthew Atanian, told GQ that when Melania first arrived in New York at 26, she didn't go out to dance clubs. She'd go to Harry Cipriani for dinner at 10 and be home by 1. Men she would go out with tended to be wealthier, the industrious, European type. They were Italians, playboys. But they'd go out for dinner and she'd be home before I was. Melania and Donald met not so cute. As the story goes, the then 28-year-old model caught the eye of the world's greatest self-promoting real estate developer in September 1998 at a party during Fashion Week at the Kit Kat Club in Times Square, when he was still married to his second wife and dating Norwegian cosmetics heiress Selena Midelfar. As soon as he spotted Melania, he zeroed in on his future bride. People often ask me what it's like to go on a double date with Donald and Melania, but that assumes that they are a normal couple that does normal things, like meet friends for dinner or go see a show. Of the few times the four of us were out together, never a double date, always with others at a charity event, the men talked about real estate and golf. Melania essentially listens when she goes out with Donald. Because of his monologuing, it's nearly impossible for anyone to get a word in. If the two of us were seated next to each other, we would talk, but Donald had a tendency to rope her back into listening to him, as in, hey, baby, did you hear that? Hey, baby, am I right? Melania never pushed Donald to spend more time with individual couples. They both liked going to openings and events to get their picture taken. David, on the other hand, tried to avoid the red carpet as much as possible and doesn't like to do fancy parties that feel like more work after work. He prefers having dinner alone with me or with our close friends, hosting at home, and going to concerts and sporting events. Friendships. Melania and I showed up for each other at personal events. She came to my surprise 40th birthday party at MoMA. I went to her baby shower. but our friendship was lunch-based. Since Melania didn't go out at night unless it was with Donald, she relied on midday meals for her social life. I kind of hate going out to lunch, since it eats up your whole workday. But if it weren't for our monthly lunch dates, Melania and I would not have become good friends. She preferred to meet on the early side, at 12:30, so she'd have time to pick up Baron at school at 3, which she very rarely missed. And when we were together, she always offered to take me to pick up my kids, too. A couple of times I asked her if I should invite mutual friends Rachel Roy or Pamela Gross, and she said, "Let's just do us." I had her undivided attention when I unloaded about whatever work crisis was getting me down. She listened intensely, making eye contact the whole time, as though she couldn't tear her gaze away from my face. No over-the-shoulder peeking for her. Her responses to my stories, frowning at the right moment, laughing loudly at my lame jokes, came off as spontaneous and genuine. After one such lunch, she said with acute syntax, still laughing from our laughs. "We traded off paying. It's my turn," implied that there would be a next time, and there always was. We formed an unspoken understanding that our time together was precious and needed to be protected and nurtured. Melania chose me for my company, our conversations, the way we made each other feel. No deadlines with her, only heart outpourings, mainly mine, some serious moments, always laughs, and lunch. I thought she was smart, genuine, trustworthy, and grounded. She gave really great common sense advice. I would tell her about a tiff with David, say how I'd gotten mad at him for playing golf on Saturdays. She'd say, "Just let him do what he's going to do. Why get in a fight about something that won't change?" It sounded like brilliant insight at the time. This piece of advice came from her own life experience and how she'd managed her own marriage. And it seemed to work for her. Can you imagine the number of men in America who would like their wives to take this kind of advice? Any intimate question about her marriage was deflected by her seamlessly turning the chat back to what was going on with my husband, my kids, and my career, about which she was endlessly fascinated. I was all too happy to gripe about my work and have someone on the outside, but interested in, the biz to listen to me, assure me, and put me at ease. To the many, Melania is glacial, impenetrable. But to the few, she was warm and sweet, and I was her girl. Giving. Humanitarianism is about promoting human welfare and making a positive difference for all of society. I learned about the joys of charity work from my mother, who sits on numerous philanthropic boards. Since Vogue, I have felt compelled to give back, donating my time and money, in particular in areas that have impacted my own family deeply, like supporting research for food allergies, sitting on the advisory board of the Sean N. Parker Center for Allergy and Asthma Research at Stanford University, and supporting the Child Mind Institute. A constant thread in my emails with all my friends was my asking them to donate to a charity auction. To Melania's credit, she always came through, gifting a meal at the Trump Grill or a round of golf at a Trump property. I never saw Melania or Donald simply write a check, as most of my friends and contacts did. That wouldn't have been visible enough. If they were going to give something away, people had better know about it. Although they were always invited to these charity auctions, they rarely attended them. When she did come to an event by herself, also rarely, Melania walked in with her head up and an "I'm above you all" attitude. She wasn't intimidated by the celebrities and power players on the guest list because she didn't give a damn about impressing anyone. Unlike most people who go to parties, Melania was not there to make friends or to network. She showed up because she wanted to, or Donald did. If she wavered about going, she didn't go. I invited her to my farewell lunch from Vogue at the Trustees' Dining Room at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, hosted by Anna Wintour and Emily Rafferty, the museum's president, when I resigned from the magazine in 2009. I'd been in charge of 9 Met Galas, had 3 kids by then, and needed to slow down. Anna said she never lost sight of her mission, to enable the dinner to be the most fabulous event of the year, any year, in New York, so that it could raise much-needed funds to help the museum. At the last count, in Stephanie's time working on the benefit, that has meant approximately $40 million. It was a beautiful party, and I was honored that so many of my friends and colleagues came to send me off. I placed Melania next to Andre so she'd be comfortable and happy. She sent me an email the next day saying it was a beautiful luncheon, that she was so happy to be a part of it, and that I looked fantastic. If you have a second, please mail me the names of PR that you think will be great for my timepieces and jewelry line, she put at the end. Thanks a million. This dynamic emerged that I was the giver in the relationship. Melania was the receiver, always looking for more. It started small, with her asking for recommendations for assistants, housekeepers, designers, florists. Even when she was thanking me for including her or helping her, she'd slip in a request for something else. At the time, it didn't faze me. In 2010, in order to give them the best possible seats, I hosted Donald and Melania at my table at the Met Gala. As soon as Donald sat down, he asked, "Where's Anna's table?" Real estate was everything to him, and if he wasn't seated close enough to Anna, well, he wasn't happy about it. Anna was strategically seated on the other side of the room. That same year, Melania asked for me to serve as a reference by putting my name on Barron's application to the school my boys attended. She said, "You are my best and first choice." I agreed to do it, of course, although Barron never went to that particular school. She enlisted longtime Trump attorney Michael Cohen to help with Barron's admissions, too. He was extremely well-connected on school boards. Slavishly devoted, Cohen did help Melania get Barron into Columbia Grammar and Preparatory School, which two of my kids eventually attended as well. One day, Melania emailed that she'd dropped off Barron and spotted my middle child there. "I saw Taylor today," she wrote. "I called his name, but I don't think he recognized me." Maybe because his name is Tyler, not Taylor. She spelled and pronounced his name incorrectly for 10 years, and I never corrected her, and neither did Tyler. She saw it spelled the right way in my texts, emails, and party invites, but stuck with her variation. What could I do? I chalked it up to the language difference. In 2012, Melania asked me to write a letter on behalf of her sister, Inez, who was applying for an O-1 visa. She sent me a sample letter and wanted me to write something similar. I looked up what an O-1 visa is. It's for individuals with extraordinary ability or achievement. To qualify, per the U.S. government website, the beneficiary must demonstrate extraordinary ability by sustained national or international acclaim and must be coming temporarily to the United States to continue work in the area of extraordinary ability. This was a different kind of visa than the Einstein EB1 Melania had received for extraordinary ability in the sciences, arts, education, business, or athletics through sustained national or international acclaim, which specified, "Your achievements must be recognized in your field through extensive documentation. No offer of employment is required." So what was Inez's area of extraordinary ability in which she would continue to work in the U.S.? I had no clue. Melania sent me a recommendation letter for Inez's application written by someone in the Trump Organization, describing her gifts in the field of design. Mystery solved. The letter I read said, "I got to know Inez more thoroughly, and I learned what a talent and visionary she is in the field of design. I heard her ambition and passion for design the more we spoke, and I realized her talent needed to be utilized immediately. As my real estate projects continue to continually develop, there is always a need for a true artist to finish the project and complete the details. The organization enjoys a superior reputation and hires only the best and most talented staff to maintain and enhance its brand image." It went on and on. The letter writer said that Inez did work on a commercial property, but I have no idea if that was true. I wrote my own letter, signed it, and emailed it back to Melania. I never asked her about it again. Inez got her visa and now lives in New York. In 2013, I got an email from Melania's assistant asking me to make a call to get the Trump's invite-only tickets to the Met Gala. Didn't she know I hadn't produced the event in years? I couldn't help her. A few weeks later, I followed up and asked what she was wearing to the event, and she said, "We decided not to attend." Even to me, she fudged. The truth was, they couldn't buy or steal tickets. But her implication to me was that they had chosen not to attend. I didn't challenge it. I accepted her for who and what she was, regardless of what anyone else thought about her and her husband. I knew a Melania that no one else did, the warm, laughing softy with flashing eyes who made me feel safe. I gave her the benefit of the doubt, and she took it. Parenting. In 2013, I had to close my doors at SWW Creative. Zach's illness became more severe. My son was my priority, and I shifted my focus toward his care and research into uncharted territory for food allergies. I dedicated a lot of my life to learning about, supporting research into, and helping to find a cure for food allergies through trials, clinics, collaborations, and partnerships. I invited Melania to attend an event I was hosting that I'd been working on for quite some time, and she knew was important to me to raise funds for food allergy research. She wrote that she was not available that day. I thought that was a bit abrupt, especially compared to the note from her stepdaughter Ivanka, who wrote a heartwarming note about my son and a long explanation saying that she was out of the country on the date in question. Ivanka and I knew each other from the Met Ball and other connections around New York. In 2013, David and I had dinner at her and Jared's modernist apartment. I loved it. We had a nice evening. After dinner, they took us to peek in on Arabella Rose while she was sleeping. It was really kind of sweet. Melania and Ivanka got along okay. Pre-election, Melania talked about her relationship with her husband's adult children as cordial, comfortable. From what I understood, Melania was accepted by Don Jr., Eric, and Ivanka. She hadn't broken up their parents' marriage, after all. She said that while they were growing up, they came to her for advice. As for why Melania was uncharacteristically terse with me, whenever I invited her to my food allergy fundraisers, she didn't go to any of those events. I found it weird, but I didn't push it. "I'm so tired," I texted her after one particular event. She replied that she didn't know how I did it and reminded me to take care of myself. "I wish I had time. Schedule it." In January 2014, Zachary entered a clinical trial at Stanford University School of Medicine, and within 3 months he had already developed some immune tolerance. Melania checked in, texting weekly, sometimes daily, "How is Zachary feeling? How are you?" She remembered my birthday and wished me a joyous and magical day. 3 confetti emojis, 3 balloon emojis. "Love you, miss you. Let's get together for lunch soon." 3 heart emojis. Emojis could have been invented just for Melania and me. Those tiny little symbols said it all without having to actually say it. And when they came from her, they had special meaning. In early May, I sent a photo of Zach holding a peanut M&M to family and friends that said, "Zach is holding and eating, under strict protocol, the foods he is allergic to. We all know that this is not a cure yet, but a way to a normal way of life, where our children can go to restaurants, play dates, sleepovers, vacations, and so much more." To Melania, I added a personal note. "Hi, I can't believe I haven't seen you in so long. How are you? Baron, DT, I am free whenever you are. I am back and forth to California every 2 weeks for Zach's medical trial. If you're interested, would love for you to join me. XOXOXO. Everyone else who saw that photo wrote back with great joy and excitement. When Melania replied 9 days later, she didn't mention Zach, just tried to set up a lunch. I was hurt, but I chalked it up to the reality that people are busy. I never placed any expectations on replies to emails, because I am the worst at replying and feel terrible about it. Melania is private about her relationship with Baron, not wanting to share parenting challenges, while I am unabashedly open about being a helicopter mother. Zach has courageously overcome many health issues, but still needs a lot of my attention. I hover in protective mode. I do it with Tyler and Alexi, his younger siblings as well. I share an extremely close bond with all 3 of my kids, in which there's an open line of communication and feelings are shared and listened to. Our snuggle time, TV time, and dinner time is what I look forward to at the end of each day. Melania is oddly secretive about her son and her experience with motherhood. If Baron got sick, she wouldn't mention it, or she'd say he was feeling better once it was all over. When I complained about breastfeeding my kids, Zach for 6 months, Tyler for 5, and Alexi for only 1 because I tore my C-section stitches running up the steps of the Met to get to a meeting with Anna and had to go on antibiotics, Melania didn't hop in and say, "Oh, yeah, breastfeeding's a killer," as many women would. She just listened to me and laughed. The one time she opened up about anything childbirth-related was when I told her David was in the delivery room each time. Melania revealed that Donald wasn't within 200 feet of her delivery room. She wouldn't allow it. It takes a village to raise children, and I am so grateful to all of the people who have helped me raise mine. I wouldn't have been able to do so and have my career without them. Melania and I both agreed that our parents were lifesavers, and I was lucky to have my in-laws too. Melania has perpetuated the myth that she never hired a nanny when Baron was young, and that she waited to start her businesses until he went to school. But even Donald admitted that the Trumps had help. "Yes, there is a young woman, someone who works with Baron," he told the New York Post in October 2015. "There was always someone there, the cook, Melania's assistant, and a lot of the time, her mother, to watch him. Now at the White House, Baron hangs with the Secret Service agents." For 2 years, our kids coincided at Columbia Grammar and Preparatory School and loved it. When friends asked Melania how Baron was doing in his classes, she would say, "He's great. Any issues?" they'd ask. "Nope," she'd say. "He's just a boy. All the normal stuff." It didn't matter what was going on. What's Melania like on a playdate? This is another question I get a lot. Baron's playdates were his playdates. Melania didn't sit around watching the kids play, nor did she entertain the mothers who arrived and wanted FaceTime. Many moms tried to finagle playdates. Few succeeded. I'd often hear moms at school say, "Melania and I are such good friends. I went over there for a playdate and we hung out for hours." When I'd see Melania and tell her I was happy to hear she was branching out, she'd laugh. "Oh, sure," she'd say. It just wasn't true. Even though the vast majority of parents at Columbia Grammar are Democrats, Melania was inundated with requests after the election. She didn't change her tune. "Baron decides who he plays with," she'd say. "The playdate is not for me." Baron's isolation is a function of his parents' fame and values. Melania, fiercely private, has taught him to be the same way. He was something of a prankster. Once, Melania and I took a stroll around the residence. In the Lincoln bedroom, I asked her, "Doesn't it fill you with awe to think of who slept in here?" And I don't mean Ivanka and Jared. They had held a Shabbat service in the room the day after the inauguration. Melania told me a story about how Baron had secretly placed a recording device in the Lincoln bedroom and timed it so that it made ghost moans and noises when a friend of his was in there. Melania thought it was so cute. "He's so funny," she said. Melania's childhood. We all know Melania grew up in a communist Yugoslavia, now Slovenia, in a town called Sevenica. Considering that she told GQ's Julia Iafi in 2016, "I love my childhood. It was a beautiful childhood. It's just plain weird that she never talked about it with me. I was naturally curious about what it was like to grow up in a communist country. I figured that if she wanted to tell her stories, she would eventually. But since she never picked up the conversation about her childhood when I shared details about mine, I let it go. I was raised that it's rude to pry." You can go online and read the curated version of her past, the things she and a select group of approved sources, including me, have revealed with a heaping pinch of salt. I can tell you what I've personally observed about her family relationships, having spent time with Melania and her parents in living rooms, cars, and planes. Melania's father, Victor Navs — Melania changed Navs to Naus when she started modeling — is a sweet man, but I wouldn't characterize their relationship as super close. When Melania and her mother go back to D.C. after a vacation or weekend at Mar-a-Lago, Victor sometimes stays in Florida to play golf. Father and daughter are not physically affectionate, not at all like Ivanka and Donald. Since Melania provides for her family, she and Victor have a bit of a role reversal going on. She makes the rules. I imagine it wasn't that way growing up, but it is now. The first time I met Victor, I couldn't help noticing he resembled Donald physically: girth, height, and constant suit and tie. The two men are only 5 years apart in age. During his working years, Victor was a deal maker, selling used cars at a government-owned company. Basically, Melania's father was a lot like Donald. Also like Donald, Victor had children by multiple women, fathering Melania's older half-brother, Dennis Sigelnack, with a woman not his wife. When Maria Sigelnack told Victor about the pregnancy, he allegedly urged her to get an abortion. She had the baby anyway. Victor denied that the boy was his, and the mother took him to court. A blood test confirmed his paternity, and Victor was compelled to pay child support until Sigelnack was 18, but he refused to meet or acknowledge him. Melania has never met her half-brother either. When Iafi asked her about him, she said the story wasn't true. The reporter produced court documents, and Melania backtracked, saying she misunderstood the question, that her father was a private person, and essentially, to back off. So that's one family secret Melania protected. Perhaps she learned to keep her mouth shut about her family while living under an oppressive government as a child, when one wrong word could get someone thrown in prison, or maybe she just likes to withhold. Melania and I are also both super close to our siblings. They're our trusted best friends. I have met her sister, Inez, but even upon threat of death, I couldn't remember a thing about her. I've heard she is a homebody. She flies so far below the radar, many people are surprised to learn that Melania has a sister at all, and that they have a tight relationship. We are also both incredibly close with our mothers, whose unconditional love is what keeps us emotionally satiated and whose support keeps us dependent. We don't keep secrets from our moms. They know everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Her mom, Amalia, is just as chic as her daughter, always kind, polite, and sincere. When they're not together, she and Melania talk every day. I've been on long car rides with Amalia, whose English is about as good as my Slovenian. Our conversations went like this. Melania is doing so great as First Lady. Yes, smile nod. Baron seems really great too. Oh yes, smile nod. Amalia is a constant calm and steady anchor at home for Baron, who speaks Slovenian fluently. They all converse in Slovenian when together, often in front of Donald. Her presence in his life gives Melania great comfort as she travels and attends to Donald. Melania also looks after her parents' appointments and healthcare in the U.S. It's a big responsibility, one she shoulders without complaint. That said, when the Novs are in a different city, Melania is happy to have some breathing room. Who can't relate to that? She's like Marlena Dietrich. She wants to be alone. My childhood. Growing up, my extended family numbered only 14 people. With my immediate family of five, I grew up in the Catskills in upstate New York. My parents fought constantly. It was a bad marriage. My brothers, Gordon and Randall, and I were the reason they stayed together as long as they did. Mom was tenacious about getting us out of the house and fostering our independence. I was 12 years old and the last one to leave home to go to boarding school. Boarding school was the best decision my mom could have made for the three of us. As for my paternal grandparents, our relationship was severed during my parents' divorce. My father told his parents, "It's either them or me." They chose their son over their grandchildren. And then there were 11 family members. Mom married Bruce and we were 12. When my maternal grandparents and my Aunt Shirley passed, that left us with 9, including my mom's younger sister, my Aunt Roz, my Uncle Martin, and my two cousins, Brandon and Devin. Today, I'm happy to say we are more than a bunch at 22, and I feel that we have a strong family. Mom was our source of love and strength, a supermom parenting by herself with an emotionally distant husband, an only child whose family operated lucrative egg farms in New York State. He was miserable about following in his father's footsteps and longed to be anywhere else than there with us. Mom expected Gordon, Randall, and me to always rise to the occasion, to be the best at everything we did. B's were unacceptable and C's were forbidden. You could be president one day, she would say to each of us. Mom lived with a perpetual sense of danger. She was born in Germany in 1947 and resided in a displaced persons camp in Zeilsheim, 11 miles west of Frankfurt. Bubby Ethel and Papa Joel, her parents, managed to survive the Holocaust when 6 million others didn't. Their stories about the concentration camps were harrowing. Their experiences were a huge burden to bear. My mother told me that toward the end of Bubby's life, as she was tucking my grandmother into bed, Bubby said, "I cannot take it anymore, the nightmares and visions of the camps." She told me once, "I was shuttled into the back of rail cars filled with horseshit, just like cattle. And when we arrived at the camp, we were pulled from the cart and pushed to the left or right side." My mother knew her fate and forced me to go to the other line, leaving her and my two sisters. They were carted away to the crematoriums. Papa was a gentle soul, an intellectual. He had a farm and did real estate investment. He worked 7 days a week. Papa told us, "I had 7 sisters, all were killed. I saved myself once by lying with the dead. We waited for the dogs to finish eating. Maybe there was something left." Telling their stories would take a book. Heartbreak was evident, but they were valiant to go on with their lives and raise their children. We saw Bubby and Papa almost daily, and if they didn't come over, Mom would speak to them throughout the day. They were tough, with pure, loving souls. Even though I was the youngest and the only girl, I was never treated like a precious little princess. I was just one of the boys. No pigtails or Barbies for me. I liked Tonto and Bruce Lee. My brothers and I bickered, threw punches, and broke a few toes, kicking each other in a nose or two, wrestling around. Teasing me was their idea of fun. The three of us attended public grade school together and were bullied, mostly because we were Jewish and had a nice house. Our father said we had to learn to defend ourselves. It would have been nice to have had a dad confront the culprits of our bruises, but his words did lead us to karate class, for which we are grateful. Mom, my brothers, and I practiced Tang Soo Do 5 days a week and became black belts. The Dojang became our home away from home. Eventually, we all became black belts and were left alone. Your mom's a black belt too? Melania asked when I told her about it. She couldn't believe it. My brother Randall was a successful child actor who did a lot of commercials and eventually starred in some TV shows and films. Mom and Randall traveled often for his auditions in New York and Los Angeles. Our father went away often, too, but I didn't know where. I was left in the care of Bubby and Papa, which I loved. The last time I had any real interaction with my father was at my high school graduation from Suffield Academy. I had my diploma in hand and was looking forward to the celebration ahead. And then he dropped the D-bomb. "No matter what, I'll always love you. Your mom and I are getting a divorce," he said. Although I was never close to my father and didn't like the way he treated our mother, I was still rocked by a sense of loss. I spent the summer after graduation in Ohio with a friend from school. Our mornings consisted of 5 a.m. wake-up alarms, followed by 6 a.m. dash out the door to work at McDonald's. We manned the register and flipped burgers by day and got stoned by night. 2 months and 60 pounds later, I returned home to New York City to be with my mom. The next morning, I took my first subway ride to Fordham University in the Bronx, where I interviewed and was accepted. I enrolled, made the basketball team as a walk-on, and eventually received a full scholarship playing Division I basketball for the Fordham Lady Rams. I wanted nothing from the man I'd once called my dad. I had to make my own way in the world. It was a given. My grandparents' histories with the Holocaust terrified and shaped us as a family more than anything else. My motivation to succeed as an athlete, as a student, and later in my career came from their inspiration. I've tried to match their fortitude and resilience by putting challenges in front of myself to learn what I can endure and overcome. When I got married and became a mother myself, and proudly added to our tiny family, I was immediately immersed in Zach's food allergies and the severe anxiety it caused for him and for all of us. If he ate the wrong thing, he would become dizzy, break out into hives, wheeze for breath, and his face would turn a purplish red. We've had to inject him with his EpiPen too many times and rush him to the emergency room, with Tyler and Alexi anxiously awaiting to hear from us that he was safe. When Zach was 10, it got to the point where he was afraid to leave the house and be exposed to something that might kill him. Watching my husband, David's love and patience with Zach was bittersweet, since I don't recall receiving either from my father. I married a far more loving and caring person than my father could ever be. Could Melania say the same? Our backgrounds, relationships, and life experiences are so different, and yet Melania and I bonded as women, daughters, mothers, and New Yorkers. Our common ground and devotion to each other were enough to keep our friendship going and growing. But I never thought it would change into anything bigger than a mutual admiration society of two. I was wrong about that.